Welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today. We're very fortunate today to have the county executive, Joanne Mahoney, talk to us about the budget. And really, it's an annual visit. I was struck the other night, last Thursday night, we had the first in the Citizens Academy sessions this fall. And for those of you who don't know, Citizens Academy is a program of University College and Focus Greater Syracuse, and it's sort of a primer on local government for about 30 folks, and we're able to get in a lot of city and county, some town and village folks. And the comments, we don't realize, I think, here how fortunate we are to have the caliber of speakers and the elected officials who give us our time and stand here week after week and answer our questions. Because the Citizens Academy folks, who were lucky enough to have the county executive's intergovernmental relations director, we had two town supervisors, and we had the mayor's chief of staff, an open discussion. So it's going on now, but if you want to know more about Citizens Academy, it's an annual program. And that's just by way of saying, again, thanks to the county executive for being here today. We do have a great lineup in October. I won't go through it. Marilyn Pinsky emailed and said, we could sell tickets for this. And, I thought about it, but then I thought, well, no. But I will remind folks that as a member of Thursday Morning Roundtable, you are asked to become a member of the Onondaga Citizens League. I know a lot of you got the emails, and if you need a brochure, you forgot what the membership levels are, I have the brochures, and they're also online. So thank you very much for remembering that. Speaking of the Onondaga Citizens League, I want to quickly remind you that our study this year is on refugee resettlement. We have a film series coming up. I've seen the films. They're great, each on a different kind of aspect. The first one is Tuesday, October 2nd. Believe it or not, that's next. This coming Tuesday is October already. It's at Inspiration Hall, which is on James Street on the corner of James and Catherine, 7 p.m. Again, go to the OnondagaCitizensLeague.org website, and you'll find out more about those three films. Really, really fascinating documentaries and very complimentary to the study. I also want to quickly welcome our newest member, Gary Grossman. Where's Gary? There he is, back there. Welcome, Gary. Gary is with Green & Seifter CPAs. Among his civic endeavors, Everson Museum, Jewish Children's Foundation, Syracuse Symphony Foundation, and thank you, Marilyn, for introducing Gary to us, or introducing us to Gary. But right now, another of our new members, Matt Marco, I introduced him last week, is going to introduce our county executive. Thank you, Matt.
Good morning. I want to say thank you for welcoming me into this fantastic forum. I'm a new member this year. I'm a public radio junkie and been a fan of this organization for years. And last fall, I had the privilege of joining this group when the Deputy County Executive, Matt Millay, discussed the Save the Rain initiative, which I am honored to serve as the Green Infrastructure Program Manager. It's been a truly remarkable opportunity to be a part of that program right here in my own hometown. In the world of professional engineering, it does not get any more exciting, any more state-of-the-art than this program. It is a true national model for how innovative thinking can transform a problem, one that has plagued generations of this community, into a renaissance of new investment into our neighborhoods. Save the Rain is making a difference in the quality of our water environment. It is changing Onondaga Lake from a liability to an asset. It is investing in our community, and it all started with the person I'm here to introduce today. County Executive Mahoney has infused new thinking into county government, and her leadership is fostering a vibrant Onondaga County, not only with her sustainable environmental policies, but in all facets of her administration. Spend only a few moments with Joni, and you'll recognize she is a game changer. As a result, People are taking notice and the awards are piling up. Joni, we look forward to hearing about your presentation on the 2013 budget. Ladies and gentlemen, County Executive Joanne M. Mahoney.
Good morning. I think full disclosure is appropriate. Matt, we pay you, right? Where did he go? Thank you very much for that very warm introduction. I am back again to give you an overview of the Onondaga County budget, which I presented to the legislature on Friday, September 14th. And in the process right now, the legislature just finished the budget hearings, and they're preparing the Ways and Means Report, which will be voted on Friday, Friday, and then there'll be an opportunity for a public hearing when people hear what's in that Ways and Means Report, and the final budget, I think, is October 9th. So you're right in the midst of the discussion about what the budget's going to look like. I'll give you an overview, and then I love getting the questions I get from this group, so if I prompt any questions, I'll leave time at the end to answer them. I proposed a budget which keeps the levy flat, and I'm sure you all remember that the levy is the total number of dollars that we collect in property tax countywide from everybody, and that number this year, again, is $148 million in my budget. I'll give you a little history. In 2010, the levy was $184 million. In 2011, it was $154 million. And last year, for our current year's budget, it's $148 million. And I'm proposing that we keep it at $148 million. I think we are about where we need to be. The sales tax sharing formula that was changed really shifted the way resources are spent in the county, and there's been an adjustment over the last few years. The city now, at the end of, this is our last year of the adjustment. 2013 is the last year that you will see things like, and I don't envy the people that have to write the newspaper, but I propose a flat budget, and then you'll see a newspaper story that says that property taxes are going up in the towns. So you'll stop seeing that after next year, because that's the residual effect of the change that we made to the sales tax sharing formula, and I hope that makes sense. And this year's change adjustment is lower than last year's, which is lower than the year before. We had a real steep incline in that shift. And as I said, the end of the story is going to be that mostly the 3% property tax, or the 3% sales tax that's collected in the county, is going to be kept by county government, and it will do things like offset your property tax, which is why you see the levy go from $184 million to $148 million in the last couple years. And then the additional 1% that New York State gives us permission to collect, there's an 8% sales tax, 4 for the state, 3 for the county, there's an additional 1%. And that almost in its entirety will now go to the city of Syracuse. So I can tell who lives there. I do think that we're where we need to be, though, in terms of that mix between property tax and sales tax. I do go to the bond rating agencies myself annually with the CFO and others from county government. We are rewarded with a very strong bond rating in Onondaga County. I think we have the second strongest in New York State. But they do recognize that sales tax revenue is more volatile than property tax. Property tax, we send the bills out and you have to pay them, and there really is very little fluctuation in that revenue source. So when we change the mix and we start to lower the property tax and fund more of our operation with sales tax, we become more vulnerable to changes in the economy. So I have asked the legislature to just be aware of that. There's a real want on the part of the legislature to continue to lower that levy, and I understand that, and I'd like property taxes to be as low as they can, but we have to be careful that we don't depend too heavily on a revenue source that's as volatile as we've seen that sales tax can be in the last few years. Sales tax this year is up higher than we projected in this year's budget, so we're going to have a little bit of a surplus. we're seeing right now, I'm budgeting, that sales tax growth in 2012 over 11 will be about 4%. And then I've projected in next year's budget additional growth of about 3.4%. Those are very healthy sales tax revenue numbers, almost scary healthy. We're seeing a recovery. And what I'm also pointing out to the legislature is that historically we have had a very predictable incline, gentle incline in the sales tax revenue that we collect in the county. We've seen spikes in the last year or two, but I think it's a recovery, and I think economists think it's a recovery. There's pent-up demand to buy things that people had put off, but I think we're going to get back to that trajectory, and I don't want the legislature to depend on increases like 4% and 3.5% over the long term, because I'm not sure that that's where we're going to end up when we get done with all of our adjustment. We have a healthy fund balance. The fund balance at the end of 2012 is going to be about $80 million. And there are suggestions that it might even be higher than that. That money belongs to the taxpayers in Onondaga County, and I recognize that, and I want to make sure that we don't have a fund balance that's higher than it should be. The policy in the county is that we have a 10% reserve, 10% of our revenues set aside in a reserve account. The comptroller this year suggested that we calculate that number differently and only count our reserves against real revenue and not revenue generated by interdepartmental transfers. So the comptroller is suggesting that the fund balance is higher than it needs to be, and I'd like to get that fund balance number down. But if I take the fund balance and plug it into the operating budget, then next year when it comes time to fund the operating budget, I have what we affectionately refer to as a structural deficit. So we have to be careful that we spend that fund balance in a way that doesn't cause a structural deficit that we can't then overcome. So I'll tell you how I propose that we spend that fund balance to avoid those kinds of things. I have in my proposed budget a fund balance appropriation of $4.5 million. And then I have, for the second year in a row, a fund balance list that I am giving to the legislature to consider alongside their budget. That will include one-time expenses. So they're not things that have to be funded again next year and the year after. And I am making the argument that using fund balance, which is a one-time revenue source, to cover one-time expenses is a way for us to use the fund balance in a way that doesn't cause a structural deficit by putting it in the operating budget and also doesn't force us to raise taxes. As I started out, we're not asking for any increase in the property tax levy, despite the fact that costs are going up. One of the ways we're able to do that is because of this new way that we have done things last year, and this is our second year, where if we have one-time expenses, we're asking that the fund balance be used. Because next year, if we're all wrong about our revenue projections and we have a problem with the budget, all of the things on that fund balance list are things that can wait for another day. So we don't cause ourselves a big problem going forward. The third component of the fund balance. There's the $4.5 million in the operating budget. That fund balance list totals $9.9 million. There's a third amount of money, and for the first time I'm asking the legislature to restrict fund balance, and I'm asking them to take $5 million and put it aside with a lot of strings attached to it so that neither the executive side nor the legislative side can spend the money for anything other than servicing debt. The county has had an historically low amount of debt. We've done a good job of paying for things as we go, but we haven't always taken care of the facility the way I think it maybe needed to have been taken care of. If you look at some of the floors on the Civic Center and things like the windows, there is need for improvement. So last year on that fund balance list, the legislature appropriated capital money to do some of those projects. But if you look on the horizon in the next 2, 3, 4 years to service those bonds, we're going to see spikes in our debt. So I'm asking the legislature, since we have this healthy fund balance, let's look out onto the horizon, put some of that money aside to service those debt spikes that we see coming. So that's my plan for the fund balance, and that'll bring us to 10% of the revenue as calculated by the comptroller. There is something new in my budget, and I hope you have heard something about it, but we have a program in the budget that I call Sustainability Pays, and it's a program to start to try to drive behavior that recognizes that we are a county and we are a region, as opposed to we are a series of small municipalities that compete against each other. We're stronger if we're all together. We have home rule in Onondaga County. In New York State, we have home rule. So we can't tell towns and villages, nor do I want to, believe it or not, tell towns and villages what they can and can't do. But when you see the effects of sprawl, you can see that on a county level and on a regional level, we have a problem. But on a small municipal focused level, that's a source of new money to spend on your school district and in your town and in your village. So we recognize the desire on the parts of the towns and villages to increase development, but we're trying to educate folks that overall it's costing us all a lot of money, because very simply put, and I hope you've heard me say it before, the population in our county is flat, but we have hundreds of miles of new roads in the last decade, new water pipes, new sewer pipes. It's simple math that it's going to cost all of us incrementally more money if we have that much more infrastructure to pay for and there's the same number of people. So we've put together a new sustainable development plan that has updated what was referred to as the county's 2010 plan. The 2010 plan had a lot of great things in it, but a lot of exceptions were made to it, and we saw the effects of sprawl despite the fact that we had a pretty good planning document. So we reached out to the community and we put together a new planning document that I'm asking the legislature to make the county's policy, and I've committed as a result of all of that work, I told people before they did all of that work that I'm committing to supporting the plan that comes out of the community, and I won't grant exceptions if we put a plan together that says this is the sewer district, this is where the sewer lines are going to be, this is how we plan to grow. I will support the plan, and that I think is going to be a shift in things, but I'm happy to report to you that the Builders Association were represented on the steering committee. So we got the perspective of people that are typically pro-development and made sure that we were doing the best we could to understand everybody's needs and try to find that magic spot where people can be as happy as they can be, but at the same time we can recognize that we have a problem in the county that needs to be solved at least countywide, if not regionally. Inside the Sustainability Pays plan, then, are resources to provide to the towns and the villages to do things like update their plans and to support their efforts to abide by our sustainable development plan. And for instance, I'll give you one thing that I think makes a lot of sense. Builders have told us that when they take a big piece of land and they go to the town and they subdivide it for a development, they start paying the higher property tax on the individual lots. And what this program is going to do, among other things, is say, if you've bought that land in the inner rings of our community where we want infill and we want more dense development, that we'll provide the money so that the town doesn't have to increase the property taxes on those lots inside the areas where we want houses to be built. So the developer will have an incentive to build inside the more densely populated areas. Those are the kinds of things that you're going to see in my Sustainability Pays program. I think if I had to guess that this is one of the things that I'm going to have the most trouble getting through the legislature, so I don't know that it'll still be intact on October 9th, but we're starting the conversation. I think some of it will probably be intact. I've heard positive things about the part of the plan that is supporting farmers in an effort to keep farms so that they don't necessarily want to sell to developers to turn those into more cul-de-sacs. And so that I've heard good feedback from the legislature, but I don't know. It's a $6.5 million appropriation in 2013 in my budget. I don't know that it's all going to make it. But I do recognize that there are people who own farms who have thought their entire lives that that's their retirement that's out there, and that when the time comes, they want to be able to sell to a developer, and that's their 401k. And I recognize the sentiment that it's difficult to tell that farmer you cannot do that. And we're not trying to do that. And I have heard comments on the radio and other places where people say, you know, how do you tell that farmer that he can't do that? And I would respectfully add to the conversation, how do you tell his neighbors that they have to pay for it? Because we're all going to pay for more infrastructure if we don't have more people moving into the community. As I said, it's it is pretty simple math. And I'll tell you, the tenets, the basic tenets are that we want to fix things before we build new things. We want to support the efforts in the community to support our local farms. And there is money set aside for the Save the Rain in the suburbs. And just as an aside, that's one of my favorite things, because you might remember when I came into this job, I came from the city council where there had been a lot of acrimony and lawsuits trying to prevent sewage treatment plants from being built inside the city of Syracuse to support the cleanup of Onondaga Lake. The city, when I was on the city council, lost, and we ended up having the Midland Ave sewage treatment plant built inside the city of Syracuse. And the response that I always got about why we were doing that is because that's where the problem is. And I said, I understand that that's where the problem is, but I think with all due respect, if the problem was in one of our more affluent suburbs, we would probably be talking about other solutions. But every time I asked, why are we building a sewage treatment plant in these neighborhoods and in downtown, that's where the problem is. So we came in, changed things with help from people like Matt Marco. We now recognize that's where the problem is, but the solution has changed, and we now have this wonderful Save the Rain program that is doing what the sewage treatment plants were supposed to do. And so sure enough, I know I have members of the legislature here, it's part of my favorite part of my story, but now the legislature has appropriated Save the Rain money in the suburbs because even though the problem didn't move out there, the solution has become so enticing that we now are doing suburban green infrastructure, which is great. The more we can do, the better. But the suburban green infrastructure is not directly associated with the consent order that we're under and the requirement that we clean the lake. But I think we were affirmed that we were on the right track when the demand came from people. I mean, if you really stop and think about it, Save the Rain is our sewage treatment plan. And the fact that there's demand in the suburbs for our sewage treatment plan is really remarkable, and it gave us the sense that we were on the right track. There is something else that's in this budget that I think you'll find interesting, and that is that I have noticed in the last 4 or 5 years, we have wonderful county roads, and we have a schedule that we mill and pave, and we keep our county roads at a very high level. And there's a rating scale of about 1 to 10, and our Department of Transportation will go back out and do a road when it falls to a 5 or a 6. And it occurred to me and to others along the way that we're spending a lot of money to improve good roads when there are other roads around us that are in desperate need of attention, but they just don't happen to be owned by the county. And one of the analogies I have given is if you live next door to an abandoned house, a vacant house, it's not your responsibility to do anything about it. But at some point, it becomes your problem. And oftentimes, you'll see neighbors of vacant properties mowing the lawn, you know, making sure the trash is picked up. And that's the thinking that goes behind an appropriation that I'm asking the legislature to support to spend some of our road money on other roads in the county that might not necessarily be owned by the county. And if I get permission from the legislature to sign a memorandum of understanding, the first roads we're talking about are our central business district. We'd really like to be able to put our best foot forward when we bring economic development prospects through. I'm sure there's a lot of people in this room. I can tell you personally, there have been people here who have considered locating an office or a call center in downtown, and they drive through our downtown, and we're not yet putting our best foot forward. So is it wise for us to be spending those county resources to take good roads to better, or should we spend some of those resources on things that are causing us a problem, whether they're our responsibility technically or not? And I hope the legislature considers, that. I do have an appropriation. I don't think it'll go all the way intact, but I'm asking for money to do a core services review in the county. I'm a big proponent of a fresh set of eyes regularly looking at things. We have a lot of new county legislators this year. We have a brand new chief fiscal officer in Steve Morgan, and we want to go back and look at the county's mission and the programs that we provide and how well we do with those programs. And then I have found that if you talk about a certain program, people will say that's mandated, and then you move on because you can't do anything about it. But that's not true, because the mandate might be to a certain level, and maybe we do it to a higher level or something. So I'm going to ask the legislature to take advantage of the fact that we have a lot of new people and put money aside to do a real study about the services we provide in the county. And I'm hoping that the conversation about bringing the taxes, that the levy, the focus the last few years has simply been on reducing the levy. And I think we're getting to where the levy needs to be. And then I would like to start to focus on our savings coming from a better operation in county government. And the way we do that is to understand what we're doing now, how well are we doing it, what do we want to be doing, and then have that adjustment. There is also in the budget an anticipation of $2.5 million in savings from a redesign of our employee health care plan. And I don't know the specifics of how we're going to get there, but we do have a good labor management team that meets, and I do think that people recognize that our fringe benefit rate of almost 62% is more than people can afford in the county, and we have to start looking at the benefits for new employees and see if we can be smarter and save money and at the same time make sure that the employees have the health care that they need. I am a beneficiary of the benefits in county government, and I don't know anybody that enjoys the kinds of benefits that we do in county government, and we recognize that that's paid for by the people in the county, and we're going to do what we can to try to get that number down. There's one little thing that I like to highlight, and that is that we are saving $230,000 in this year's budget because we are no longer paying for utilities at Alliance Bank Stadium, which is one of the things with, I felt like I was drinking out of a fire hose when I got here, but every time I came up for air, people complained about the utility costs at Alliance Bank Stadium. So we are no longer paying for utilities as a county. The Chiefs pick up the bill for the utilities at Alliance Bank Stadium. There is money in here, seed money, to fund with a broader group outside the county, a veterans outreach center, and that will coordinate services. We have No Wrong Door. I know Sarah Merrick is here, and we have a great program in county government for social services, and we want to do that same thing for veterans. No matter what your need is as a veteran, we want there to be somewhere that you can go and get directed to the services that you are owed. There is money in here to support arts and cultural organizations. There was an economic impact study done. I don't know if it was reported on to this group, but the arts have generated $133.4 million in economic activity. There's 5,000 jobs supported by the arts, and over 3.8 million people attended events, or events were attended. And we recognize the economic impact of the arts, and that's the way that we sold it to the legislature last year and are hoping to do that again this year. We have room occupancy tax, which is the money that people pay when they come and rent a hotel room in Onondaga County. We have 22% of the room occupancy tax directed to go back into the arts and cultural organizations. And that is so the arts and cultural organizations can plan on a recurring source of revenue. And when they know that the pot is generated by hotel room nights, we're hoping that they focus on things that are going to draw people in here and you know, they'll get a bigger piece of the revenue going forward. And you might remember that I got out of the business of getting into the level of detail about whether the Red House, I think I told you last year, whether the Red House gets $10,000 or $5,000 or how much for the opera or how much for the stage. And we have an agreement by the arts organizations that that money's going to go to the arts leadership group and that they will decide on a year-to-year basis how that money gets appropriated. But the county is supporting arts and cultural organizations in 2012 and in my budget again in 2013, and I have every reason to think that that will get through the legislature, helped in part by that economic impact study. The last piece of big news is Van Dyne. We did a request for qualifications in RFQ, and we got 8 responses last year, and we chose Upstate Medical University as the best fit for the community, and we worked very hard to try to put that deal together, but ultimately the SUNY Board of Trustees did not give permission to Upstate Medical University to go forward with the acquisition of Van Dyne, and I'm told that it has more to do with SUNY issues at Downstate. There is a medical university, a counterpart to Upstate, called Downstate, that I know had significant financial problems in the last year, and so it might have more to do with that. But the county has moved on to the number 2 on our list, and the person that we are now talking to, we have a letter of intent signed to sell Van Dyne to, it's confusing because they're called Upstate Services Group. So I think a lot of people think I'm still talking about Upstate, but I'm not. I'm talking about the group that owns what used to be Vivian Teal Howard and is now called Central Park. They have a terrific track record of their ownership of nursing homes, and they have committed to the safety net component of Van Dyne. We take people as a county, we take people at Van Dyne that are very hard to place. And that was one of the things that was most important to us and why we originally chose Upstate Medical University, to make sure that the safety net component was still intact. And this new group has committed to doing that. The policies put in place at the state level in terms of reimbursing counties for nursing home days in Medicaid is they have the ability to get us out of the business because the rate we get is lower than this new organization will get. It's going to be better for people who reside at Van Dyne and their families, and it's going to be better for the employees. I'm sure that there are going to be bumps in the road. The employees are now represented by CSEA. I'm sure that they don't want to hear that those jobs are going to be transferred out of the county. The new operation, I think their employees are represented by SEIU, so we're going to have some conversation, some bumps in the road, but ultimately it's the right thing to do for the people who reside at Van Dyne, and it's the right thing to do for county taxpayers because we're looking at an annual $11 or $12 million subsidy to Van Dyne going forward. It's a lot of money for this county to continue to spend simply because we're digging our heels in and saying we want it owned by the county, when if we transfer the ownership and the rate goes up, then it's on firmer financial footing and it's not being borne by the taxpayers directly. So as much as we maybe don't want to do that, I do very much believe that it's the right thing to do. One thing you haven't heard me talk about very much is mandates, and I just want to touch on it and give credit where credit's due. The new Tier 6 with the pension for employees is going to provide relief. It's out on the horizon. It's not immediate relief because we're all 4, 5, Some people, I think, in county government are still one and two, which I'm very envious about. But but that will provide long-term help. And then the Medicaid cap went from a 3% cap to last year the legislature has put a cap on the growth that is going to be phased in, which means that when we get through this phase in, which is I think two more years or so, what the dollar amount is that we're paying in the county is what we're going to pay, and any growth in Medicaid cost beyond that is going to be borne by the state. But before you get too excited about that news, I want to put these numbers in perspective for you. We still spend in Onondaga County over $600 million in gross revenue on Medicaid. Not on social services, but on one program, on Medicaid, $600 million. A lot of that is federal money and state money. And of that $600 million, $104.6 is paid for by us at the local level. $104.6 million paying for one program. Compare that to the beginning of my comments when I told you that the total property tax levy is $148 million. So almost every dollar we collect in property tax is going to Medicaid, and more than every dollar we spend is going to mandates, because Medicaid's only one. We have early intervention, and we have daycare, and we have probation, and we have certain levels of supervision mandated for inmates at the jail, and we have the mandates exceed the property tax levy. But there is some good news in that they've put a cap on how bad it will be. And pension costs, which is something I know the mayor talks about a lot. Pension costs are projected in this budget to be $43 million, which is an increase of 3.3 over last year. And then I just want you to consider this, so that this is my shout out to the mayor, so that you will be sympathetic when she talks about pensions. In Onondaga County, the local cost for pensions in 2008 was $15.4 million a year. This year, it's $43 million. It's an increase of 179% in 5 years. So it's astronomical how expensive pension costs are, and they are going to do things like bankrupt municipalities. We have, I'm enjoying the benefit, and so are you, of a really good history in Onondaga County of fiscal responsibility. We've never spent more than we had. We had buffers. We had rainy day funds. We came through this recession not easily, but we did it, and we're on firm footing right now. And I'm hoping that with this core services review, we can start to look at how we do things in county government, that we can continue to improve the operation and reduce costs for people. But you know, I lucked out following John Mulray and Nick Pirro, and I tried to honor that legacy by continuing that fiscal responsibility. And you know, we cut a lot of programs when the bottom fell out of the economy. We drew those parameters I told you about, food, safety, and shelter, made sure that we were meeting our obligations to people. But beyond that, we cut a lot of things that we heard a lot of noise about, but it got us through what was a very difficult economy. That's why I'm afraid of these sales tax projections, because my first budget was put in place in October of 2008, literally passed by the legislature the day before Lehman Brothers declared bankruptcy and the whole economy imploded. And we missed our sales tax projections by $30 million. And it has been a long road out of that hole. So I don't want to get comfortable and start projecting sales tax revenues that are too aggressive, especially when we're balancing it against a levy that is significantly lower, $40 million lower in 2 years. So that's my formal presentation on the budget. I hope some of it made sense, but I'm happy to hear your questions. Thanks.
I want to mention that on the Sustainable Development Plan, we do have scheduled program here at the end of November. So we'll talk, and you're going to be here. No, but so we'll hear about what actually was passed. But thank you also for reminding us that there are there's a large freshman group of legislators, and also redistricting. I mean, I was thinking about, oh, I'm going to check in with my legislator, Linda Irvin, and see where she is on all of this. But then I remembered Linda Irvin isn't my legislator anymore. We were redistricted apart. So I'd better get with it. And so that's a reminder to everyone else also.
While you're going to get that question, Sandra, I can tell you that my relationship with the legislature is very much improved. You know, I came in a difficult way because their guy was my opponent when, you know, and there was just a lot of, we wish she didn't win. Is that a safe way of saying it, Linda? but that's kind of behind us. And my experience in going through this, it's been a new day. It's been great.
Okay, we're glad to hear that. Thanks.
This is going to be a surprise to you, but I'm going to ask a question that may give you more revenue. How about that? Okay? Ready for it? It seems to me that when the Dome opened up, they were not paying sales tax on programs, which means that I don't know whether they're charging a sales tax, but they're not getting it. Why don't we change that after 20 or 25 years? And we'll say, take 1% of sales tax and say, please pay it. And we're going to keep it in the education field by helping the least strong or the weakest schools.
I think that is a wonderful idea. And I don't know if there's representatives here from Syracuse University. I don't know if they would like it as well as I would like it, but the nonprofit status of Syracuse University, and maybe that doesn't apply specifically, but has been mitigated a little bit by the voluntary contribution that the university made to the city earlier this year. But I will look into that because I never heard that before, that there's not sales tax collected on, and I'm guessing you mean the programs. Not the programs. Okay, all right. I will look into that because I never heard that before, but I was very happy to see that Chancellor Cantor and the mayor came to an agreement that recognizes that the university gets a lot of benefit from the city and that it's expensive to service the university, and without a commensurate contribution to the tax base, it's difficult to continue to do that.
Uh-huh. Okay, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you. Good morning, Joni. Once again, I'm glad I'm here. Thank you for your leadership. If you want me to hold this question until the sustainability program, just ask me to. But I'm wondering what the relationship is with the sustainability groups and local zoning ordinances, which I know from personal experience are really antiquated. So I wonder how those two efforts are going to, how they will probably not be compatible.
I have the breakdown of how we would like that $6.5 million sustainability pays sum to be allocated, and $500,000 of that I'm asking for, a full $1 million for model zoning and code development and technical assistance, and we're going to try to support the other municipalities' efforts to update their zoning and planning documents. And, you know, it's to our benefit to do that, and that's how we justify putting the county resources behind it.
Great, thank you.
I have a question about sales tax revenue, which is so important to your budget. When Destiny is up and running, hopefully at close to 100%, can you predict, or have you predicted, what the sales tax revenue may be in the future, and what percent of your total sales tax revenue is represented by Destiny?
That's funny because, you know what, I anticipated that question and I don't have the exact numbers. I don't know if Marty does, but I can tell you that I think it was like $17 million that's generated from Destiny. I would like to get back to you with those numbers because this is not the popular perspective, but I was very deeply involved in that original deal. And again, I go back to math. If you put pencil to paper and took what the experts said would be the sales tax generated per square foot of the addition, and you compared it to what the property tax would be, we struck a deal where the sales tax generated would exceed the property tax that was being offset. And that number took into account the fact that not all of it is new revenue. Some of it would be coming from people that were previously shopping at Shoppingtown or Great Northern Mall. And that is the case. We have a net benefit in terms of the sales tax that's generated at Destiny. It's not what it could have been. It's not what we all hoped that it would be, but no harm was done. And that is an opinion that I have based on putting pencil to paper and calculating the sales tax revenue generated on a square foot basis. 800,000 square feet was the minimum required of new space, and that number exceeded what the property tax would have generated. The real question came down to, do you think they will build it without the deal? Because if we could have gotten the property tax and the sales tax, we're much further ahead. I believed that the folks at Pyramid needed the deal to build the expansion. I think we all wished it would be a bigger expansion, but no harm was done because that the requirement that they build the minimum was enough to exceed what the property tax were that were offset. That project is not anywhere near what this community hoped that it would be, but I believe that no harm was done to the community by striking that deal. As I said, it's not the popular opinion.
I'm going to go back to the Save the Rain. I live in the Westcott neighborhood and work downtown. And this summer, it seemed to me like a lot of people were put to work doing all this new parking lots all over. And I was wondering if you had done any analysis of how many jobs were created through the program. And, you know, conversely, if we had gone with the Midland plant, the sewer plant, what's the net benefit to the community?
Those are numbers we should walk around with. I don't know if Matt Marco knows the number of jobs that have been generated by Save the Rain, but I can tell you that last year when we put that fund balance list together and asked that those capital projects be done, including the Project 50, which was the Save the Rain project, it was recognizing that we have a really healthy bond rating and we can borrow money low, but it is going to require us to pay it back, and that's why I'm asking that that money be set aside. And I can tell you, and maybe Matt can, but we have a lot of groups that have come together that are training people in how to install and maintain the green infrastructure. And if you go to these work sites, you will see a lot of new faces, which I'm particularly proud of. Do you have any idea how many jobs we're generating?
We're actually crunching those numbers right now as the surge of projects from 2011 and 12 are completed right now by Thanksgiving. We should be able to get a handle on how much has been in labor as well as how much in materials that has been spent locally.
That's great. And most of these jobs are contracted out because, as I told you, we have a 62% fringe rate, so we can't afford county employees. So most of these jobs are contracted out. We've actually got a couple stories that I think they made it to the last paragraph of the people I hire story. But we've taken people. Marty's the only one who liked my joke. We've actually worked with people that are taking nonviolent drug offenders that are coming out of jail and training them to learn how to plant trees and install porous pavement, and we hope get the skills to participate in a career that's long-term. I mean, these are the jobs of the future, and we are trying to make sure that if we're going to get all of this benefit, that we get as much as we can. And that is, we need people to be trained, we need people to go to work, we have a lot of work going on right now. How do we put all that together? And we are doing that.
I just want to stay with the topic of malls, but turning to Shoppingtown, does the county have any involvement in what I'll call the current situation there? And what do you envision going down the road, or what is your hope eventually for that mall?
I don't have a role. The taxes are current, so nobody other than the owner has a role. It's not like the county can step in or the town of DeWitt can step in. But the town of DeWitt has reached out to the owner, I know, Ed Michalenko, and even gotten the attention of Senator Schumer, who came to ask the owner publicly to let folks know what is the plan for Shopping Town, because there's not a lot going on there right now. But I don't know. I don't know what's going on at Shopping Town. My hope, I would like to, you know, I live over there. I would like to be able to just stay right there. And, you know, I joked around when I voted for the Destiny Project that I'm not really a shopper. You can probably tell, right? I'm not really a shopper. And I don't want to go to Disney World to buy socks. So I'm hoping that there'll be other outlets. Yes.
Well, that being said, staying on, Sarah has a question. We'll get to that. On the sales tax issue, it is a kind of a sad but true, I guess, that we rely so much on sales tax, which means telling people, hoping that people will buy things, that people will consume things. But if we could get people from outside the region or get more people here. So now I'm tying this into the Convention and Visitors Bureau study report about doing some things to enhance the convention and the convention center's pathway to downtown, and then also encouraging more visitorship to Destiny, and I guess also generating more hotel nights, which in turn will help the arts and culture. Which, I mean, is that are you supportive of that idea of using local money, whether it's the hotel tax or whatever, to try to get more people to Destiny from outside the region?
Not specifically Destiny, but I know Destiny is. And Destiny has given us the number of people that they believe come from outside the region and even as far away as Canada. And as you pointed out, that's wealth. I mean, that's money that comes in from people that leave their money here and then leave and don't then use our services. That's the thinking behind appropriating the room occupancy tax to the arts and cultural organizations, hoping that they will put programs together that'll draw people into the region. And we are also still hopeful and have a reasonable expectation that we're going to get the Hotel Syracuse back, which is why we are not moving forward on a new hotel right across the street from the convention center, as some people I think want us to do. I want a new hotel for the convention center, and I think we could do it right now in this economy. You see the Marriott being built in Armory Square, but I know how precarious the business plan is that's been put together for the Hotel Syracuse, and I don't want to do anything that jeopardizes our ability to bring that back, because that's, if we don't bring the Hotel Syracuse back, we have a problem. And there has to be a cost associated with that problem in the whole overview of what's the best thing to do. You know, we have the Mitzvah Tower problem at Columbus Circle, and we are trying very hard to avoid that. Even if we build a brand new hotel right across the street, we generate convention business, we can't have a vacant, hulking Hotel Syracuse across the street. So I am, and I know the legislature is, to their credit, focused on appropriating money in a way that will generate that sales tax. And just so you all know, the way sales tax was used before, and before we became so heavily reliant on it in our county budget, more than half of it was given to the towns and villages. The villages, for the most part, used the money to pay for their expenses, and then whatever money was left over, they sent out their village tax bills. And so people were left with the impression that they got all these services from the village, and it really didn't cost that much. But what they never saw were the sales tax dollars that were going in before their bills were being generated. In the towns, they passed the money through as a reduction in your county property tax bill. So the county was kind of guilty of that too, of not letting people know how much it actually costs to operate county government. It was very confusing, and all of that money was being spent with no incentives in place to drive behavior. And now that the sales tax money has been used to reduce the property tax levy, and people are starting to see how expensive some of these other layers of government can be, you're hearing about shared services, like East Syracuse now debating whether to join with the town of DeWitt Police. You're hearing conversation about around villages that want to fold perhaps into towns. Our county government does purchasing now for the city and the city school district, and 12 or 14 municipalities in this current year we did purchasing for. Those kinds of things, I believe, are happening because of the change in the sales tax sharing formula that really exposed the need for us to modernize our government.
Good morning. The mayor a couple of months ago mentioned that civil service exams and job descriptions are getting in the way of modernizing the city government. I would assume that somewhat that's happening in the county level, and I was wondering if that was on the agenda of county executives across the state to help modernize civil service.
It's not. I participate in the County Executive Association meetings, and it's not. We're mostly focused on mandates right now, but it is a barrier. I have tried very hard to diversify the workforce in county government, and we have, I'm sure it comes as no surprise to people, we have barriers built in along the way, and we've hired people provisionally that then don't pass a civil service exam and can't stay in the role. There are some civil service titles that just don't reflect, like typist one. You know, we don't have typists in county government, but we have that title, and we have a lot of people working in that title. So, you know, shockingly, the state's not that nimble, and they don't keep up with the changes. Civil service can be a problem, but the sentiment of civil service is good. You know, I mean, it's to give everybody the opportunity and not subject your county government to the whims of whoever happens to be in charge at the time. So, you know, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I can relate to the mayor, who, by the way, tell her I'm from the party of love. Okay.
All right.
Is that it? Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.